Adam Zeman will never forget the phone call. It was, as he called it, a Monty Python-esque summons from a psychiatrist asking him to come urgently to the psychiatric ward. There was a patient who was claiming to be brain dead. Zeman felt as if he were being called to the intensive care unit, not the psychiatric ward. Yet, this was very unlike the kind of call you normally receive from the ICU, Zeman told me. The patient, Graham, was a 48-year-old man. Following a separation from his second wife, Graham had become deeply depressed and had tried to kill himself. He got into his bath and pulled an electric heater into the bathwater, wanting to electrocute himself. Fortunately, the fuse blew and Graham was spared. It didn't seem to have done any physical damage to him, but some weeks later he formed the belief that his brain had died, said Zeman, a neurologist at the University of Exeter in the UK. It was a rather specific belief, and one that led Zeman to have some very strange conversations. Look, Graham, you're able to hear me, see me, and understand what I'm saying, remember your past, and express yourself. Surely your brain must be working, Zeman would say to Graham. Graham would say, No, my brain's dead. My mind is alive, but my brain is dead. Worse yet, Graham was distraught at his unsuccessful attempt at suicide. He was one of the undead or half-dead, Zeman told me. He, in fact, went and spent quite a bit of his time, for a while, in graveyards, because he felt he was with his own when he was there. Zeman quizzed Graham to understand the grounds for this belief. It became clear that something very fundamental had shifted. Graham's subjective experience of himself and his world had changed. He no longer felt he needed to eat or drink. Things that once used to give him pleasure no longer did. When he pulled on a cigarette, nothing happened, Zeman told me. Graham claimed that he never needed to sleep, that he did not feel sleepy. Of course, he was doing all of these things, eating, drinking, sleeping, but his desire for these and the intensity of his feelings had damped down dramatically. Graham had lost something we all have, a keen sense of our own appetites and emotions. Patients suffering from depersonalization often report this emotional dulling or flatness. Depression, too, can bring about similar states of being where emotions lose their edge. But these patients don't go on to develop such stark delusions of non-existence. In Graham's case, the loss of emotional vividness was so extreme that he had come to the conclusion, on the basis of that alteration in experience, that his brain must have died, said Zeman. Zeman thinks that two key factors play a role in such robust delusions. One is a profound alteration in the quality of one's sense of one's self and the world. In Graham's case, the emotional rug had been pulled from under his feet. The second is an alteration in one's ability to reason about that experience. Both things seem to be true in Graham's case, said Zeman. Graham's delusion was immune to evidence to the contrary. Zeman, in his conversations, would bring Graham to the point of surrender, to make him see the falseness of his delusion. Graham would acknowledge that a whole range of his mental faculties was intact, that he could see, hear, speak, think, remember, and so on. So Zeman would say to him, "Clearly, Graham, your mind is alive." He'd say, Yeah, the mind is alive. The mind has a lot to do with the brain. Surely your brain is alive, Zeman would prod him. But Graham would not take the bait. He'd say, No, my mind is alive, but my brain is dead. It died in that bath, Zeman told me. You could get quite close to producing what you would think was knockdown evidence, but he wouldn't accept it. It was intriguing that Graham had developed such an explicit delusion, that of being dead because his brain was dead. Would his delusion have been different in an era when the legal definition of death did not include brain death?